So,
And I'll just throw this out there because you're yawning a lot.
I haven't yawned.
Yes, you
I
have.
Haven't yawned.
You've yawned a lot, actually.
No, well, if it sounds like it, then I'm not sure why. I have not yawned.
Okay, then.
I don't know why it sounds like I'm yawning, but I have not.
Okay, if you say so.
I would freely admit, when have I not admitted that I'm falling asleep?
Okay. So I was offering you the possibility, if you wanted to just do intro, Kavanaugh, and out, you know, we could.
No. I had not yawned at this point. I don't know why I'm sounding like I'm yawning, which is, like, a little bit concerning now that you're saying that.
Okay.
See, now you said about yawning, and I yawned. Oh, God. Fucking, you know, what the hell? Ugh. Why did you, the devil fails? Why the hell? Now you mentioned the goddamn yawning, and now I did yawn, okay? You know, fucking yawning. Why is yawning contagious? Does anybody know this?
I think there have been plenty of studies on it. I don't know. Maybe I'll yawn now.
Yeah, that would be cool. So why is yawning so contagious? Okay, about half of adults yawn after someone else yawns due to a universal phenomenon called contagious yawning. There you go.
Okay.
Look at that. Reading the word yawn can make people yawn.
Of course.
I'm telling you. This is the most stupid, like, fucking physiological thing that we do. I don't understand it.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, September 21st, 2018. It's just after 2 UTC as we're starting to record today. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Beau is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And you are once again globetrotting, I believe.
Yes.
So, yeah, all over the place. You were really worried that we wouldn't be able to get a good internet connection today, but it's working fine so far. We'll see.
Well, this is the thing that happened. Yesterday, when I checked into the hotel, I tried to connect to the Wi-Fi with my iPad, and I couldn't get a connection, or with my phone, whichever. And I was just like, damn it. I'm like, this doesn't look good. And then when I got a connection even this morning, it was very slow. Okay?
Right.
It was just not good. It was very flaky, and I'm just like, what the hell? But tonight, I came to the room, and I was able to connect, and it's working fine.
Well, and of course, now that we've said that, it's sure to completely crap out about 15 minutes into the show.
Of course it is. And then Sam goes, and during the first few minutes, I don't know why, it sounded like on the line, like I was yawning, even though I hadn't yawned.
Uh-huh.
And so Sam tells me that
I'm
yawning.
You were yawning. You were yawning. You just didn't realize you were yawning.
I was not yawning.
It was not then, like weird Skype interference.
Dude,
it was a yawn.
No, I'm telling you, I was not yawning. And then he fucking says that I'm yawning. And then, you know what? I start yawning. Because according to the research, it says here that even reading the word yawn can make people yawn.
So,
which I find absolutely absurd.
So I'm sure all of our listeners are now yawning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll get you all to yawn.
Yeah. Yeah. So the agenda for today.
I want to yawn now.
Indulge.
I'm not gonna do it.
We could have an all yawning show.
That would be so entertaining.
You know, they have those things where, you know, the videos and stuff where people just like whisper or talk in an interesting voice and try to
Well, we're not that show.
We're not that show. We could do that.
Not
we,
really.
We could
no.
spend an entire show like just sort of talking calmly to people about what they're no.
You sound like the computer text to speech thing now.
Yeah, I'm not doing what is that stuff called, ISMR or something? I forget
whatever it is.
Do do do.
Sam from the future. creature here?
It is actually ASMR, which stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. If you want to know more about this, feel free to look it up on Wikipedia. Do, do, do.
Yeah,
but I'm not doing it well. Sounding like I don't have the right voice.
It's like that Apple voice, the Fred voice is the one that you sounded like.
Yeah, but the people who really do that, it's usually like a female voice, sort of a husky female voice. And it's sort of, but not always. Sometimes it's just sounds of other sorts. And it's sort of designed to sort of like send like, it's the kind of thing that you have a physiological reaction to just the sound where it feels like tingly or something. And, you know, or to some people really annoying as well, but you know, some people really love it and it's like relaxing or something. I don't understand. But like these things get millions of views and the people who create them, like, you know, are making good bucks on YouTube.
Okay. They're out of their minds. Okay. Well, anyway,
so anyway, the agenda.
Look, news flash before the agenda. I just scrolled through Twitter and it says here that Alex Jones says he's already won and is ready to die.
Okay.
I mean, I think we all agree that I think if he's ready to die, then I'm like, that's his plan. I'm like, go for it.
I don't know. It reminds me of who was that TV preacher who said, you know, God would call him home or something.
I'll call him home. It was I think it was Jim Swagger.
Jimmy Swagger. Those were the days.
I think he said something about that he needed to raise, I don't know, how many millions of dollars, and that if he didn't, then God was going to call him home.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't think he called him home.
Well, for a while.
For a while. Is he dead already?
You know, now you're going to make us look this up, right?
Exactly. Of course I am.
We haven't even said what the, you know, agenda is yet. But we'll get to the agenda. Jimmy Swaggart is alive. He's 83.
You killed him, and he's still alive.
And now, was he really the one that was going to call?
I'm pretty sure. As a matter of fact, I see a picture of him. It reminds me of when he did that. Yeah, he was like crying.
No,
on TV.
It was Oral Roberts who God was going to call home.
Oral Roberts was the one? I thought it was Swagger.
No, it was Oral Roberts.
Oh, God. They all suck. Anyway, they're all fucking weasels.
And Oral Roberts is dead. He died in 2009.
Okay, so you were right about the guy being dead and the money. We were wrong on the name, but I'm the one that provided the name. So therefore, yeah. So anyway,
all of that aside, time for the actual agenda for the show. Our main topic is, of course, going to be Kavanaugh and all of the accusations against Kavanaugh and the reactions to that and all of the back and forth and everything that's going on with that, blah, 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 blah. And in this intro segment, as usual, I'm going to do two media things. This time, it's a movie and a book. Then for any time we have left, lightning round. You know, we just have a bunch of things. We're going to do that until we feel like we're done. Because we've got a whole bunch of other smaller things, but nothing that really seemed worth, like, doing a whole segment on. Does that sound about right, Yvonne?
That sounds good.
So, as I said, we're going to start out, as usual lately, with things I have watched or read. So, first of all, is a movie. This one is from 1961. And Yvonne, you may have some opinions on this based on some, some perhaps stereotypical performances in this one.
Yeah.
But West Side Story.
Oh God. I think that the last time I saw this was like so freaking long ago. I don't even remember any of it.
Okay.
Anymore.
So West Side Story.
I mean, I know it's about Puerto Ricans are involved in something or whatever, but God sakes, I can't remember. I mean, I know that when I watched this, it was in the 80s.
Yeah. Okay. That's
already 30 frickin' years ago.
Yeah. So West Side Story is a musical. It started out on Broadway, I guess, and then it was made into a movie.
I think I'm trying to remember now. Did I go watch the musical or the movie? I know I did one or the other, but this is how bad it is, how long ago it is, But I can't remember which one it was. I'm pretty sure it was the movie.
Yeah. And so it's basically Romeo and Juliet, except in New York with the two groups instead of being the Montagues and the Capulets. It's two gangs in New York, gangs of teenagers, I guess. One that is, Puerto Ricans who've come to live in New York, and I guess the other is Italians or something. I forget.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some differences from, you know, the original Romeo and Juliet, and it's a musical, so they sing all the time. So it's like, and I've there's some musicals I've enjoyed, and, you know, but this one, like, I don't know. It just seemed comical, actually, in terms of, like, them having, you know, okay, we're going to have a gang fight, but they're actually dancing, you know, and singing while they do it, you know?
Well, the gang fight. Okay.
You sure. know, and, you know, they're, and this, I don't know. And I could definitely see as I was watching it, you know, okay, there's some stereotypical portrayals here of both the Italians and the Puerto Ricans that I could see people getting like annoyed about today. And I guess at the time they weren't really perceived that way. Maybe, I don't know, but it certainly seemed like, I don't know about this. I don't know how I feel about watching this. Cause it was very cartoonish. I mean, it wasn't a cartoon. It was a musical. It was people, but it was caricatures everywhere. You know, there wasn't anything that was like a, you know, in-depth, like, anything, real characters. And, of course, like, the main Puerto Rican character was played by Natalie Wood, who, of course, is not Puerto Rican. So I don't know. In my thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways.
Or are you on the sideways?
I'm on the sideways. Like, I'm not going to say that this was so horribly unpleasant that I had to force myself to continue watching it, but it seemed to remember it was like widely acclaimed at the time and people really liked it. And I'm sort of like, eh.
I don't know if it was the movie that was widely acclaimed of the musical. I mean, so I think it was the musical. And now that I'm flashing back, I think I did watch the musical.
Like in the movie. Theater with live performances.
In a theater, yes, yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, they've done this musical. I mean, it's not like it's like older musicals. It was some revival of it, whatever, in some place. It was not in New York.
So, in terms of awards, it won the Academy Award for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Film Editing, Best Music Scoring of a Musical Picture, and Best Sound. And it was also nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Okay.
And of course, I watched it because it was on AFI's 100 Years, 100 Movies at the number 41 spot.
Okay.
So it won some awards. Now, did the, let's see, the musical.
Tony?
I'm looking. Yes, it won a bunch of Tonys. When it first came out in 1958, Tony for Best Musical, Best Performance by an Actress, Best Choreography, Best Scenic Design, Best Costume Design, Best Conductor.
Okay.
And then it won more Tonys when it came back in revival in 1964 and again in 1980.
Okay.
And again in 2009.
There you go. But I guess you didn't like it that much. Okay.
Well, I didn't like it that much. I mean, you know.
Look, I mean, look. Let me say, for example, I went to watch Cats, for example. The widely acclaimed musical.
Yeah.
And I know I fell asleep.
I was not impressed by Cats.
I also saw Cats
on Broadway.
I saw it in the West End in London.
Okay.
But in my defense, I am pretty sure that I went to watch Cats the day I arrived to London.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So I was jet lagged. Okay. So that didn't really help. And I remember that it was before the intermission, and this was actually when you and I were in school. I don't know if I recall the one time I went to London when we were in school, but I went to the thing. You know, to the concession in the intermission, and I grabbed whatever the hell the biggest coffee they had was, I fucking just chucked that damn thing. Because I said, I didn't fly all the way to damn London to fall asleep at the damn theater. Okay? All right. So I chucked that, and then I went back and I finished watching the thing. I did not fall asleep again after I drank all that damn coffee. I think I was pretty wired.
Okay.
Afterwards.
So back to West Side Story. Another thing was, Natalie Wood, like somebody else sang the songs, I guess.
Well, Natalie Wood is dead.
Well, now, not when she did this movie.
Oh, okay.
That would be difficult.
Oh, you mean during, I mean, so during the movie, Natalie Wood.
She did.
Did not sing her parts in the music.
She did the speaking and the acting, but when it was time for singing, somebody else did.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so, it was apparently Mammy Nixon did the voice, whoever that is. Or Marnie Nixon, sorry.
Never heard of her.
But anyway, yeah, no, I just did, I don't know. I didn't get it. It did not resonate to me, and it seemed silly, like, as opposed to, like, and, you know, you were talking about other musicals, and I wasn't particularly impressed by Cats, but I liked Phantom of the Opera, and, you know.
Did I watch Phantom of the Opera? I don't remember anymore.
Anyway, and I like, Sound of Music was fun.
You know, here's the thing, right? I know I watched Cats. I can't remember what the hell Cats was about.
Well, the thing is, it wasn't about anything. It was a bunch of little short skits. There wasn't a coherent plot.
I don't remember any of it. Yeah. I don't remember any of it.
And I've seen a few, and I kind of liked them, but I don't know. This one just, like, didn't do it for me. Like, I don't know. Like, some of the others, like, the singing sort of felt more natural and more integrated. This just, every time they were, like, doing their little singing and dancing act, I just wanted to laugh. Because it didn't seem at all, like, natural. And I guess it never really feels completely natural, but I didn't get as taken out of the moment as I did. This really looked very much like, you know, oh, okay, there's people singing and dancing, and every once in a while in between they tell a little bit of a story, you know? And I don't know. Whatever. Okay, enough about West Side Story from 1961. The next thing is a book. And this one was an audiobook called The End of the Suburbs, subtitled Where the American Dream is Moving, from 2013 by Leigh Gallagher. And so this one was one that was very much talking about it was in reaction to the housing crisis of a few years earlier, and basically talking about how, you know, people had built all these suburbs and everything was designed around commuting and all of this kind of stuff, and how in lots of areas of the country, the suburbs were in decline and urban areas were ascendant again. And even where there were suburbs that were thriving, they were starting to move to a very different model of suburbs than the ones that were built, over the last few decades before that were really completely and totally designed around the automobile, sort of your traditional, you know, development with cul-de-sacs and, you know, off the main road, and where you couldn't get to anything without a car. And the suburbs that were thriving sort of still had, you know, sort of a central core with businesses and sort of were concentrating on walkability and stuff like this. And it was sometimes somewhat interesting, but I kept thinking throughout the whole thing, two things. One, this is a person who doesn't really like suburbs and likes the urban environment better, and it feels like that bias permeates everything. And the second thing I was thinking, which ever since the moment I read this book months ago, I was like, I should ask Yvonne this, is how much of the trends that were existing, say, in 2008 to 2013 have actually reversed themselves since, and how much has continued in terms of the relative difference in terms of where people are moving and where housing is hot and where it's not and all this kind of stuff.
I think that downtown housing has continued to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
And has gotten stronger. I will tell you that in my experience, looking at housing prices and how they have moved. I was just discussing. Look, you look at all the downtown, big downtown core markets. Prices for housing, like, look, where you live, if you go to Seattle, New York, Boston, Miami, L.A., San Francisco, I mean, pricing has gone through the roof. And people and population has shifted substantially to those more dense urban clusters. And if you look at housing prices in suburban areas, even like very strong popular suburban areas, I will tell you, like around where I live, I mean, housing prices definitely rebounded from 2008, but they're certainly not at the accelerated pace that those downtown urban cores have been rising at. Look, Miami, for example, is a great example of this. When 2008 hit the housing crisis, I mean, everybody thought, oh my God, there's going to be all these empty buildings. Downtown Miami built way too many condos. Instead, they're fucked. Look, right now, prices are above where they were after the crash.
Okay.
And there is the population in downtown Miami has had a huge increase in the last 10 years. It's crazy. I mean, the amount of people that have moved into there. So it's definitely I'm not going to say and pronounce that the suburbs are dead. I don't think that's the case. But I do think that young people, especially without children, okay, and now that people are marrying later, okay, and having children later, they want to be there. And they are, and the numbers show that that is where they are moving to.
So her thesis was very much, you know, not just that, you know, there was sort of a temporary movement towards the cities, but that these people, even when they did have kids, et cetera, were wanting to stay in more urban areas.
And that is true. As a matter of fact, the research that I'd seen is that a lot of these people that are younger, when they are having kids, they are wanting to stay downtown,
right,
rather than move to suburbs. That is a trend that is definitely there as well.
And she was talking a lot about how, you know, things had basically been engineered to, you know, people were just driving further and further and further away in order to get the big houses that they wanted. And it was just unsustainable and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, hey, I have a commute I don't like because, you know, this is how far away I had to move to get something the size I wanted, you know?
Right.
And that leads to all kinds of other problems. And she was just fairly down on the suburbs as a concept and the separation of, you know, people driving to the central core for work. Now, there are two additional things.
Well, of course, she's missing one tiny piece. Like, yes, for example, like, you know, the fact that you've got people like me. I live in the suburbs, but I don't have to drive to any damn office.
Right. Well, and this is part of what I was thinking. There are a couple things here. One is that with technological advances, certainly work from home is much more common than it was, and I think it's going to increase further over time to really separate, like, your choice of where you live from the choice of your employer. You know, for lots of jobs, they don't have to be in the same place. And you know, I think that trend is something that's just going to continue to develop. Now, there's some backlash from it, and some companies that Yahoo very famously really pulled down on their work from home. I think it was Yahoo, right?
Yes, it was Yahoo.
Because they found out so many people were just goofing off. But it's still, I think, an overall trend is a good one. And also, the other thing I always see on this is, like, when people talk about the big urban clusters that, you know, the traffic is so bad and nobody can get there, and, you know, you can't, the people can't afford housing in the city, and so they have to move far away, and then there's the commute and designing everything around cars and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, okay, part of the problem is the employers all putting their stuff right downtown too, like, spread out a little bit. And I know sprawl has a different issue, but I mean, come on now. Like, at some point you should be able to say, okay, the big core of the city, it's kind of full. Go build something in the suburbs for your next office park, you know?
But look, I will say, look, I like downtown. Mm-hmm. Okay. Look, I bought a property in the suburbs, and for financial reasons, I do like living where I am. But I probably, if pricing had gone different, I might have moved. Mm. But it's not like I hate where I live. I actually love where we live. But what I'm saying is that I may have considered it at some other point. But look, I like downtown. Actually, Manu, my son, likes downtown. Every time I take him to the city, he loves being in the city.
I like visiting cities. I would never want to live in one. Like, I like suburbs.
I don't know. I think I have no problem with actually living in a city. I mean, I've lived near downtown, but I've never, full disclosure, for the most part, where I've lived is near downtown, not actually downtown.
Right,
okay.
Right.
I've lived near a city. I've worked in the city every day. Driven to the city every day, spent all my time in the city, but not actually owned a downtown condo.
Right.
Myself, I mean, I go and I'm like right now in a downtown hotel, and I will spend weeks in a downtown hotel, and I enjoy being downtown. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of things I find it are very convenient when you are downtown. But I don't live there, so I can't say. I don't know if I would tell you. I'm like, oh yeah, no problem. Live there, in a second. But I do like it very much. So I like the crowds and the thing. And I have a subscription at WeWork, and so we have to have meetings. I use WeWork to go there, and I like being in that space in order to work. It's good. It's just not being at home or whatever.
Let me ask your final thoughts. You said the suburbs aren't growing as fast as the downtown areas, but you don't think they're dying. I mean, she was talking about, like, I mean, obviously they're just different in different parts of the country, but she was referring to some of the things like, famously Las Vegas, like, really developed lots and lots and lots of real estate. And then after the crash, lots of it was left completely vacant because
a lot of that, sure, but a lot of that, even that has recovered at this mm-hmm. point. So, no, I mean, most of those places, the ones that were abandoned, they were abandoned, and there were communities that were abandoned. But most suburban real estate has recovered from 2012, 2013, mm-hmm. and most real estate in the United States has. The fact that it grew faster in downtown is a different thing. I think it has to do with supply and demand there, that there's been more demand there than in the suburbs. So it doesn't mean that suburban real estate did not recover, because it definitely has. So,
okay, very well. And I'll give my thumbs on this one. This is another thumb sideways. It was kind of interesting. I liked it, but I still, it was one of the ones where I was like, it wasn't. And most of the nonfiction I read, to be honest, is like this. It's not like compelling, page turner, blah, blah, blah. It's like, did you learn something interesting? And
that
I guess
sounds interesting.
It was interesting, but it wasn't like, I kept feeling like I was missing part of the story. And I wished that like I said, it seemed sort of biased. Like, I think it would have been a different book if it was somebody who was sad that the suburbs were declining, whereas, it seemed...
Well, they're like, yay, kill the suburbs, motherfuckers!
Kind of, no. I mean, yeah. Not completely, because she mentioned, like, she grew up in a suburb, and she has fond memories for it, but, she lives in a downtown area, and she thinks that all of the suburbs were basically toxic to American life in a variety of ways, and, I can see how some of that's there, but, I'm fond of the suburbs, so I felt defensive on that. The other thing I want to mention, I almost forgot this, is a significant part of the development of suburbs in America was white flight when, during the civil rights era and all of this stuff and redlining even before that, where neighborhoods were sort of designated as white only neighborhoods or black neighborhoods or whatever. And there was all kinds of systemic things that resulted in suburbs as they exist in America today, that you fundamentally have sort of that racist culture behind it from the 1960s and before, or even after. But the and she mentioned this, but she sort of mentioned it in passing at the beginning of one chapter and said it was a perfunctory, I have to mention that this was important because it would be really incomplete if I didn't. But it feels like that was something that should have been a much more substantial portion of the book, given how much that history influenced how housing developed in the United States and neighborhoods developed in the suburbs and the difference between the downtowns and the suburbs and, and the revitalization of downtowns and how that affected it. It's, there's a lot of this story that is actually very, very tied up in racial issues. And it seemed like that was, like I said, not mentioned. She did mention it, but it was almost perfunctory. Whereas I think a complete discussion of this topic, that would be a substantial part of what's talked about. Not, there's a lot of other stuff to talk about too, but certainly more than she did. And I feel that was one deficiency here. So,
Well, I am, by the way, I'm not going to give a book report right now, but I am reading a book.
Ooh, we'll look forward to your book report when you finish it.
And of course, the book, again, is has something to do with aviation, for whatever.
Of course. Yeah, you couldn't possibly read a book that wasn't.
I know. What the hell? I don't know. Some book grabbed me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is interesting. Oh, shit. I'm going to read another book on aviation again. I'm like, okay, whatever, fine. Lately I've been finding it hard to find something that grabs my attention to stick with it, and apparently that did. So, I don't know.
There you go. Let's take our break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about all things Kavanaugh, and then when we finish that, lightning round with any additional time we feel like. But the big topic of the week has got to be Kavanaugh. It's the story of the day. We will be back after this.
Hello, this is Nicole. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts. The Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties: popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Featured Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for red-billed tropic bird. The red-billed tropic bird, Phathonathrius, is a tropic bird, one of three closely related species of seabird of tropical oceans. Superficially resembling a tern in appearance, it has mostly white plumage with some black markings on the wings and back, a black mask and, as its common name suggests, a red bill. Most adults have tail streamers that are about 2 times their body length, with those in males being generally longer than those in females. The red-billed tropic bird itself has 3 subspecies recognized, including the nominate. The subspecies Mesonauta is distinguished from the nominate by the rosy tinge of its fresh plumage, and the subspecies Indicus can be differentiated by its smaller size, more restricted mask, and more orange bill. This species ranges across the tropical Atlantic, eastern Pacific, and Indian Oceans. The nominate is found in the southern Atlantic Ocean, the subspecies Indicus in the waters off of the Middle East and in the Indian Ocean, and the subspecies Mesonauta in the eastern portions of both the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans and in the Caribbean. It was one of the many species described by Carl Linnaeus in his 1758 10th edition of Systema Naturae. Nesting takes place in loose colonies, the nest a scrape found on a cliff face that is easy to take off from. A single egg is laid, being incubated by both sexes for about 6 weeks. Whether the egg hatches or not can be influenced by pollution and weather, although the latter has a minimal effect on whether a chick fledges or not. After a chick fledges, the parents will usually stop visiting the nest and the chick will leave. Birds of all ages feed on fish and squid, catching them by diving from the air into the water. However, the red-billed tropic bird sometimes follows surface-feeding predators. The predators will drive the prey to the surface, which are then seized by the tropic bird. In some areas, introduced black and brown rats raid nests for eggs and young. Cats also threaten the red-billed tropic bird. This bird is considered to be a least concerned species according to the International Union for Conservation of Nature, IUCN, though populations are thought to be declining. In some places, such as Brazil and Mexico, this bird is considered to be threatened. That's all there is to it. See? Fun, entertaining, educational. And short. Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do-do-do.
Okay, we are back. So on our last show, at the very end, we mentioned that one of the things we did not talk about was there were some Me Too allegations about Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court nominee who's currently being considered. And at the time we recorded that last show, we didn't know very much about what these were. The report was that...
That letter Feinstein had forwarded to...
We knew Feinstein had forwarded a letter to the FBI. We knew that it was probably related to some incident with a woman when he was in high school. But at the time we did the recording, the details had not yet dropped. Or they were dropping while we were recording the show, or something like that. You know, and so subsequently, everything's sort of become public around this. The letter that Feinstein wrote was released. The woman in question talked to the Washington Post. So basically, we've got the information now, and then everything broke loose from there. The bottom line of it is an accusation that while they were in high school, when Kavanaugh was about 17 and this woman was about 15, at a party somewhere in suburban Maryland, when, you know, everyone was drunk, she went upstairs in whatever house they were at to use the bathroom, and Kavanaugh and one other person followed her up there, pushed her into a bedroom, closed the door and locked her in, and he sort of jumped on top of her on the bed, pushed her down, and essentially tried to force himself on her, held his hand over her mouth to prevent her from screaming, turned up the music. And then, as the accusation goes, the second person who was there, after a little bit, jumped on top of both of them, and she took that opportunity to escape. That's the accusation.
Well, look, here, there's a very simple explanation. She was the Manchurian plant. They knew that Kavanaugh was going to go to the Supreme Court, and the Democrats planned this all along and planted this woman to be in high school with him. And yes, then to make up the story and tell her friends about it at the time in order to sabotage Kavanaugh at the right moment. Is that not right?
I don't think that's right. Now, a couple things here. One, she apparently did.
Apparently,
she did not tell her friends about it at the moment. There was one report from high school from people in the class that they'd heard rumors of this thing, but she did not actually claim herself that she'd told other people. She said that the first time she really talked to anybody about it was many years later to her husband and later to a therapist. And there are notes from that therapist from like 2012 or something, so a while back, not just for this. Some of the controversy that's around this is the timing. She sent this letter first to her congressperson, who then passed it along to Senator Feinstein back in July. But Senator Feinstein, she was requesting that this be kept confidential. She did not want to go public, etc. Senator Feinstein apparently decided to honor that. She passed the letter to the FBI saying, maybe you want to investigate this, but not until later. And then it leaked at some point in the last couple weeks. And then all of this broke loose. And then the Republicans are like, this came out after the hearings were over. It's too late. What are you talking about?
Yeah, because there are rules, right? There's rules, right? Uh-huh. That this breaks those rules. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Well, and so...
break the rules.
No, it doesn't break any rules. And of course, people are talking a lot about the Anita Hill hearings back in the early 90s. And I believe it was 91, something like that, where it's almost exactly parallel. The charges became public after the hearings had ended, and they reopened the hearings, and there was an FBI investigation because the Bush administration, who'd nominated Clarence Thomas, said, well, of course we should investigate, and then they should talk. So there is that precedent.
But I thought that's like, you know, but I thought I heard some Republican talking heads saying that this is bullshit, that the FBI doesn't investigate these things.
Right.
Okay, so that's wrong, too.
Well, there are a number of things that, one, first of all, there's no federal crime alleged here. There may be a crime alleged here, but it's not a federal crime. So the FBI normally wouldn't investigate that, except if they're doing a background check for somebody.
Right.
And so basically what's being requested. Yeah,
who may take a very, very important, like, lifetime appointment.
Right. And so what's basically being requested here by Ms. Ford, who's the woman who, or Professor Ford, I should say, Dr. Ford, is that she's requesting that the investigation be reopened. The mechanics of that are the Trump administration would have to ask the FBI to reopen the background check for that to happen. And the Trump administration is refusing to do that, of course.
No. No way. No. Oh, I can't believe that. Now, come on.
And so we've heard a bunch of other things.
I'm just shocked.
So just to complete the picture before we start talking about, you know, what we think of all of this, there are a few other pieces to this picture. Apparently, the other witness who was in the room, his name is Mark Judge. He says that he remembers no such thing. Kavanaugh, of course, denies this has happened entirely as well. Like, it never happened. He's not, just to be clear, and this is important in the story, Kavanaugh is not saying something happened, but she's misinterpreting it or anything like that. He's saying this never happened. Nothing like this. Mark Judge, who supposedly is the third person in the room, says that he has no memory of anything like this, which is interesting because he also has written several books about how drunk he was throughout all of high school, like blackout drunk, didn't remember a lot of things.
Well, I guess. Okay, then. Well, all right. Well,
so the fact that he doesn't remember doesn't necessarily mean anything. Because part of the accusation here was that from Dr. Ford, was that both Kavanaugh and Judge were stumbling drunk.
Hammered.
Yeah, they were. Okay. They were completely hammered. They could barely walk when this was happening. So it's also completely possible that Kavanaugh doesn't remember because he was blacked out drunk as well.
Blacked out drunk. Yep.
So now, and then we've got a couple other developments lately, and then we can talk about how all the senators have reacted to all this. One of the things that's now, I should say, there was a letter produced by friends of Kavanaugh, female friends of Kavanaugh, who said, we all knew him, and he's a perfect gentleman, and he's fine, and this could never have happened. We've also got a letter of people who knew Ford saying that they couldn't necessarily back up this particular allegation. However, the culture at the time was incredibly, there were drunken parties all the time. Lots of people in this circle acted in these kinds of ways. So this is completely within the realm of sort of their experience of high school. And then, a few hours before we're recording this show, there's also some people going around saying it wasn't Kavanaugh. It was this other guy who looked like Kavanaugh.
Right.
And this is apparently based on, you know, basically looking at yearbook photos and finding someone who looked kind of like Kavanaugh who was in school at the same time as he was.
Right. These are the same people who have put together a bus that says women for Kavanaugh. It's got a picture of Kavanaugh on the side of it.
But there's a bus.
Yeah, there's a bus. There's a bus. Okay, all right.
I didn't know about the
bus. But here's the funniest thing about the bus. There's this bus, and there's a picture of the women standing in front of the bus, right? Yet the women, the count of women in front of the bus are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. However, the men together with the women, the count of those are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So there is a bus that is supposedly women for Kavanaugh that has more men on it than women.
Awesome.
Apparently. Isn't that great?
So now, the basic controversies, and now we're getting to a point where we can actually talk about them. The Republicans scheduled a resumption for the hearing for Monday with only two witnesses, Kavanaugh and Ford. But Ford has said that she's not going to come, that she believes there needs to be an FBI investigation first.
Well, actually, she just said
I know that she might she come, but not on Monday. Not on Monday, she says.
Not on Monday.
But she might come under certain circumstances, and she laid out some situations, what she felt needed to be in place for that. So it's really up in the air exactly what will happen. Will there be a hearing? Will she show up? Will she not show up? Because her initial take was, you know, hey, I want a full investigation before I show up. And the Republicans initially said, well, we'd like you to show up, but we're going to have the hearing Monday no matter what. And I guess backing off for a little bit, you know, from the mechanics of the whether there's going to be a hearing or whether there's not, the thing that has gotten me the most about the discussion about this is that most, although Kavanaugh's defense himself is this never happened, period, this never happened, most other commentary on this from conservatives defending Kavanaugh isn't she's a flat-out liar, although some people are certainly saying that.
Oh, yeah.
It really all seems to boil down much more to, well, even if it happens, so the fuck what?
Right.
You know, and you know, what does that, you know, he was 17, he's much older now, he's a wonderful person, and, you know, youthful mistakes, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we've all had youthful mistakes. I've had youthful mistakes. I've had youthful mistakes involving women doing things that I regret having done today. However, I will say I have never held a woman down, holding her mouth shut so she couldn't scream while trying to force myself on her.
As far as I know, I haven't done that either. And I don't black out, so I'm pretty sure that that's accurate. But here's the one thing that really gets to me that's even worse about this. You got all these people saying, oh, my God, there's no men that are going to be allowed to do anything anymore because they just dig into our background. They keep, like, finding all this. I'm just like, you know what? Then so be it. I mean, I'm, you know.
The kind of stuff they're complaining about, you're complaining that you
can't get away with rape?
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week about people complaining that they couldn't get away with being racist anymore. Now we've got people complaining that they can't sexually assault people whenever they feel like when they're young and it not matter.
And get away and make it not matter.
Right.
I would prefer to have people that get appointed to a lifetime position that didn't do those things.
And you know, there was a viral Twitter post that went around from a teenage girl saying, you know, this whole discussion about how 17-year-olds aren't mature enough to know right from wrong and know what they're doing is the most disturbing thing ever. I mean, come on. You know, yeah, okay, teenagers' brains are still developing. They're still going on. Teenagers make mistakes all the time. But this is wrong.
You know, it is totally wrong.
And hearing all of these people basically defending the notion that, oh, well, you know, boys will be boys. Of course, this stuff happens. It's just so ridiculously appalling. And, you know, and also the people going, well, you know, she didn't even talk about it for 30 years, blah, 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 blah. You know. You know, one of the things that, you know, this whole, like, people not talking about things for years, there are two things that I had come across me in the last few days about this. One was there's a video of Charles Blow, who's a New York Times columnist, talking on one of the CNN shows about about this, and he brings up his own personal experiences because he was abused as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't talk to anybody about it for many, many, many years after it happened.
Right.
And you can see him even then, like, it's been like, you know, decades and decades since this happened now. And you could see him tearing up, even speaking about it at all.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly difficult for people. And, you know, I would recommend you go look that up and watch the whole thing. It's like 5 to 7 minutes long, something like that. And, you know, because the trauma from these things, you know, people sort of blow it off. Oh, it was no big deal, blah, blah, blah. You know, just why doesn't she just get over it? You know, nothing. You know, it was he only held her down. He didn't actually rape her. You know, but meanwhile, you have stories of, you know, from some of her friends saying, you know, a few years back, she was buying a house and I was helping her buy the house and pick things out. And one of her criteria was she could not have a bedroom that only had one door because she was afraid of being trapped.
Mm.
That came from this incident.
Look, you know? I once was physically assaulted by a girl that I know. Okay. And look, that never leaves me. Okay. And it's not the same thing because I could defend myself because I was bigger. Okay. Even though this person tried to choke me, basically, it was bad. I mean, she punched me in the face. I mean, she dug her nails into my neck. I mean, I had like these huge, people saw me. I mean, I had real serious physical marks from this. Okay. And I never forget that. And that happened when I was 17. And look, thankfully being a guy, I was stronger than she was, and I was able to get her off of me. Okay. But I can't imagine what the hell that was me as a man who was actually stronger than this person was able to get them off of them. Right. And I never forget that day. I can't imagine what the hell it is for you to be in a completely helpless situation and being jammed down like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't in a helpless situation and I still can't put that away. Yeah. So,
and the other one that just hit me as well is a woman that I went to high school with. I wasn't close to her in high school or not. I was the geek who wasn't close to anybody. You know, I hid in the library, but we're Facebook friends now. And she posted something a couple days ago in response to all of this. And it was her Me Too thing.
No, go on.
And I won't read the details of it because she only shared it with her friends, not with like the world.
Right, right, right. But yeah.
But she indicated, you know, 4 incidents while she was still a teenager where she was assaulted. The first of which was in 8th grade on a school bus, where, you know, and the second was, you know, a date rape from somebody she knew and trusted.
Jesus.
The third was a boss harassing her at work. And the fourth was, you know, a janitor at a place she worked, assaulting her as well. And all of this stuff happened while she was still a teenager. And she did not speak of this for years and years and years. And only recently started to tell people about that as well. You know, and it's like, this is when these things happen. I mean, she talked about, when the first of these happened in 8th grade, how she froze. And, you know, it was on a school bus full of people that it occurred. But she didn't want, she was scared of what would happen if she cried out or if she slapped him or she did anything like that. And, you know, and so no, she didn't talk about it for years and years and years. And now she has, because, you know, these things are incredibly common.
Yeah.
And it is horrifying.
Yeah.
And in moving back to Kavanaugh for a second, you know, everything we're hearing about this is the culture at that school was
horrible.
Whether or not we can pin it on him directly, yeah, the whole culture of the school was everybody getting drunk, taking drugs, doing things like that. It was a very misogynist culture, and it was just accepted, and people were quiet about that. There was another Twitter thread last week sometime relating to this, where someone said, hey, let me tell you about, you know, being a woman in high school in the 80s. In these kind of suburban environments, and how, you wouldn't tell people about this stuff. You knew you would be stigmatized about it. So there was another very, very good story I'd recommend to everybody. It's long, but worth reading. It's by Elizabeth Brunig, Brunig, in the Washington Post. From September 19th, I've seen different titles for it, but what do we owe her now? It's basically that her introduction to it on Twitter was, every town, every high school has some urban legend about some girl to whom something terrible may have happened or may not have, depending on who you believe. Over the last 3 years, I investigated my city's legend. This is what I found.
Oh, yeah, I did see this article. Yeah.
And basically, it tells the story of a 16-year-old girl in Arlington, Texas, who, after a party, was taken away and raped. And, you know, basically was abused by the entire town, who
Jesus
didn't believe her and basically chased her out of school because she was ruining the lives of, you know, the football player or whoever it was who did it. It was a football player and a soccer player, I believe. It was two of them. And, you know, reading this thing is so infuriating going through it. But then you remember there've been a whole bunch of cases like this in the news, and there are however many that never make the news, you know, and it's just fundamentally abhorrent and horrifying every time we hear more about this. And even more so is when you hear about how common it is and how these experiences are all over the place. And almost every woman has something, and there are different degrees of how bad it was, but there's not a single woman who has not experienced this to some degree. And, you know, and then we get these goddamn senators going up there basically saying with it, yeah, and maybe they don't say the exact words, but it's really clear. It's oozing out of every pore of what they say. Even if it happened, so the fuck what?
Yep.
And no, I mean, okay, like, if there's a legitimate question about whether or not it happened, damn right, do an investigation, you know, you know, but if it did happen, damn right, it should matter. I don't care that he was 17 and it was 30 some years ago or whatever it was. Of course it should matter.
It should matter, especially for this.
I mean, for anything. But yes, this is a lifetime appointment, etc.
That's the reason why I say that. I mean, you're making a decision here about somebody that you're appointing to a lifetime job. Damn it. You know what? Everything like this, when you have something credible, needs to be investigated. And, you know, we're talking about precedent. That's what historically we've done for this role. I mean, you know, if that's, you know, what you want to point to is like, well, we should do what we did before. Well, that's what's been done. And, you know, when you're, you know, but I guess they don't want to. I think they don't want to, in large part, because I do really feel that a lot of these guys, I keep feeling, must have done something like this that keeps just talking about this.
When you hear the guy making the comment that says, if we hold everybody to these standards, then no man is safe. You're talking about yourself, dude.
And so all of a sudden you're like,
you're just admitting, exactly. You know, if you think that, then you're obviously in a world where this stuff was normal. And,
exactly.
And maybe our whole world is like that, unfortunately, but you know,
no,
it's not okay.
It's not. I'm sorry. No. I mean, I was in a high school where we drank everything that existed. Okay. Not a lot of drugs, okay? Because that just wasn't our culture. But in Puerto Rico, we definitely drank everything that existed and was known to man. But a culture of sexual assault? I mean, look, I maybe I could be corrected about this, but it was not something that was, I mean, I was at an all boys school. We had to, you know, we met girls at parties and so forth and whatever, but I don't recall that was something that was acceptable or that anybody would be okay with.
Well, although I think part of what's going on here, though, is that it's becoming clear that, you know, there are certain people who are just oblivious, and maybe you and I were both in the oblivious category. I mean, I mentioned.
I won't argue that that's very possible.
And then there'd be people that were involved and were part of that culture. Like, I mean, the thing from, you know, my Facebook friend in high school, like, I had no fucking idea that anything like that could possibly be going on, you know? And I know I was oblivious to a lot of what was going on in high school because I wasn't in those circles and I wasn't involved with those people, but, you know.
But I did hang out with a lot of those people. That's the reason why I say it. I mean, I was at those damn parties.
Right.
I was, you know, drinking like with all these people. And I don't recall that this was in our group acceptable. And I'm like it. But I also say that, like you said, if it happened, I'm being told now, I understand why I wouldn't have found out, because the culture seemed to be, if anything like this happened, you basically intimidated somebody into not saying a word.
Yeah, because if you saw, like, at one of these parties you were at in high school, you know, a boy and a girl go upstairs into the room and then come back a while later, you might not have thought anything of it. You would have thought, you know, whatever they did up there, completely consensual, blah, blah, blah. But that might not have been what went on behind closed doors.
Right.
You know, yep. And if the woman was feeling like she couldn't talk about it or whatever, because
right, she wouldn't have said anything. Right.
Because, yeah. You know, the fear on all of this, you know, like I mentioned that Washington Post article, you know, this woman actually did come forward. She told a bunch of people right after it happened. And then the next morning she went to the police. And did the perpetrators, like, have their lives ruined? No, she had her life ruined. Not just because of what she'd just happened as a victim, but because of how everybody else reacted to her making the accusation.
Well, hell, it's what we found out with her right now. She's gotten so many threats that apparently she's had to leave her home.
Yeah, and we're back to Dr. Ford. Yes, she's left her home, because she's gotten threats for herself and her family based on making these accusations. And so, it's not like this stuff is in the past. This stuff is right now. You know, right now. Yeah. And it's appalling. And, you know, the Republicans also making this case of like, well, we got to hurry. We got to get this done. We got to blah, blah, blah. And that's complete bullshit, too. Like, if they wanted.
That is the biggest bunch of horse shit.
There's
This needs to happen like right now. We need to move with speed. Why are the Democrats like blocking us? I want to fucking, like, every time I hear them say that, I want to like grab them and just start punching the shit out of them. Well, I mean, I'm just like, really? Really? You assholes are saying this. The same people that didn't hold a hearing for 300 plus days to Garland are now saying, oh, the Democrats are holding us up. They're not following the due process.
Right. And just time. Even if you stick to their, we want to get this done before the election, because they've got all kinds of political reasons why they might want to do it before the election. The Anita Hill FBI investigation took like 2 or 3 days. You know, they could have an investigation here. Maybe it would come up with something. Maybe it wouldn't. But they also, like, clearly don't really want to find out. Like, even when they're talking about having the hearings and having the two of them come, they don't. They're not going to call that third guy, Judge Mike Judge or Was it Mike Judge? Something Judge.
Whatever Judge. Yeah,
whatever Judge. They're not calling him. They're not calling any other people from the class who might have been there. There was another person who was identified as potentially one of the other people at the party who didn't go up to that room. There's no interest there, or at least there doesn't seem to be from the Republican side to actually figure out did this happen or not. It's just like, how fast can we brush this off and move on? And this is one of those things too. And now let's talk a little bit about the politics of this thing. How you treat this, like there may or may not be any effect on the nomination. Like unless some of the Republicans start dropping off, they could still ram this through and nominate this guy and he could be on the Supreme Court in a week and a half. Right. But how they treat this is affecting people's impressions, because this is yet again, the Republicans have been losing college educated women left and right for a long time now. And this kind of thing accelerates that. Now, to some degree, you got to look at that and say, well, I guess anybody who is going to leave because of this crap has already left, right? So maybe it isn't that big of an effect. But you know, the Republicans have to think going into 2018, the last thing they want is a huge spectacle of, you know, them basically crapping all over a woman who's saying she was abused. But that's what they're doing. And if they did bring her in and have her in a hearing, and if it was anything like the Anita Hill hearings, the spectacle would be like the optics for a bunch of old Republican men, questioning her about everything and doubting her and basically trying to impugn her in various ways. That's just not a good look. They are talking about how if they have a hearing, one of the ways they're thinking about trying to avoid that is have the senators not question her directly, but instead, you know, basically bring on a female lawyer for the purpose of doing the questioning so that they don't get those optics. So we'll see. I mean, there's still a lot of dynamics in play here. People have also talked about if they insist on going ahead and having the hearings without her, she could hold a news conference of her own and talk at the same time in a more friendly environment. There are all kinds of things that could play out here. I think fundamentally, like, I've had mixed feelings and I've gone back and forth about whether her ploy, like, she could have just said, yes, I'll show up at the hearing. I'll talk and I'll say whatever you want. Instead, she initially said, no, do this. And now she's laid out conditions and said, I'll do it, but not Monday. And we'll see how that plays out. But I'm not sure in the end, like there's two things at play here. One is there anything that's actually going to derail Kavanaugh from being on the Supreme Court? And that boils down to, can you get anything into the public in the next week or so that is going to peel off any Republican senators who are like, okay, that's too much, I'm out? And obviously people look at the two female Republican senators first. But it could be others. I think Flake actually came out and said, if this is true, it's disqualifying. You know, so there are other Republican senators out there and you need two to flip. So there's that question of like, is there anything that can actually sink this nomination? And like when we were speaking a week ago and where this was just starting to break, it still looked fairly clear that like this was going to sail right through, no issues whatsoever. He's on the court. It's just a matter of going through the formalities. Honestly, even with all this, that still seems like the most likely outcome, but the possibility of him being sunk is not out of the question. It certainly could happen. You know, the right set of information, another woman coming out and backing this up and saying that, you know, this happened as well. To them, like, cause usually the saying is always, there's never just one, right? You know,
right.
But that's all we know about so far. But if we had one or two additional women come out and say the same thing happened to me, that changes the dynamics a lot. So there's that. Can the nomination actually be derailed? And of course, just to be clear, President Trump could go nominate somebody else next week who is just as conservative and would do all the same things on the Supreme Court, but hadn't attempted rape in high school. And they could probably even, like, push it through before the election still. You know, you're running out of time, but they could probably still do that if they wanted to, and certainly in the lame duck session if they felt like it. So there's that whole thing. And then there's the second one, is how does what is playing out now affect the 2018 congressional elections? Because, you know, whatever they do here is changing people's impressions of the Republicans and Democrats. And will it make a difference on the margin? We've talked a million times about how most people have their minds made up and aren't going to switch no matter what happens. But there certainly are people at the margins who might switch, and it affects voter turnout and who's motivated to come. And this is the kind of thing that, once again, like, you know, if they walk all over this woman and ruin her life and still nominate this guy, even though, you know, there's a good indication this might have happened. And just to quantify that for a second, well, no, let me finish this first. Then there are a whole lot of women who are going to be really angry, and that's going to motivate them to come out. You know, I guess in terms of whether or not it actually did happen, again, in terms of motivations, you know, people keep saying, like, well, we can't make a judgment on him just by an accusation that has no proof around it. And I completely buy that. You don't want to have an environment where anybody can just come up and raise their hand and say something and you ruin somebody's life without anything beyond that. However, when you look at this, there are surrounding things that make this very plausible. And also, when you look at her situation, she was very reluctant to come forward. She has some documentation about this years ago. And it's what's in it for her if it was made up? Yes, she's a Democrat. Yes, she doesn't like Kavanaugh. Yes, she doesn't like Trump. But fundamentally, like, whose life is getting ruined? Her life is getting ruined right now. You know?
Well,
what would motivate, you know, and of course somebody's going to say, well, Soros is paying her or something, you know, but come on now.
Manchurian and Soros. Yeah. I mean, obviously,
I don't know this.
I know I got my check.
All this stuff just makes me very mad. And, you know, I think it's so plausible that, you know, could I say definitively that Kavanaugh definitely did this? Of course not. I can't say definitively that that's true. But if I had to make a bet on it, I'd certainly say he probably did.
No, I'm definitely putting my money on the fact that he did it. That's for sure.
Yeah. And is it possible that he was so drunk he doesn't remember it? Sure. That's possible.
That's possible. Too. True.
Or is it possible that he did this so often with so many people that he doesn't remember it because it was completely normal? That might be possible, too.
That might be possible, too.
But we'd probably be hearing from more women by this point. I don't know.
Or not. I mean, I mean, how much attack has this woman received for doing this?
Right.
I mean, how could you feel comfortable coming forward with this? I mean, it takes a lot of courage.
There was another tweet from a journalist in DC saying, you know, one of my sources who's been talking to me about a Me Too type allegation from a major political figure who I'm not going to name right now, but he said it's a major person, you'd all know him, has been reluctant to come forward, and I've been, you know, working with her trying to say something. And she emailed me today basically saying, look, here's why not.
Yeah.
Look what's happening to her.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, so to wrap this up, any predictions? I mean, this situation still seems very dynamic and very chaotic, so I don't have a lot of confidence in terms of what's going to happen over the next week.
I don't have a lot of confidence this is going to happen either. There is one thing that I can say about the situation is that, look, the polling shows that Kavanaugh is not popular.
No.
As a choice. At all.
He's the He's less popular than a bunch of Supreme Court candidates who didn't make it, you know, Bork and whoever that one that George W. Bush nominated and polled and a few others, you know. So Harriet Myers, that's who I'm thinking of.
Harriet Myers.
In the end, the polls don't matter, though. It's only what the senators matter.
But look, I agreed. But also, these senators are looking for there is a campaign going on right now for a whole bunch of Senate seats. Polling data shows that the Republicans basically politically shot themselves in the foot with the tax package, okay? It's not popular with their constituency. Mm-hmm. It just isn't. Okay? And they're the data showing that this guy is also not very popular either. So you got those two strikes. Good. That's why I'm like, man, I mean, are just a couple of arses going to say, well, the hell with this. I can't keep just going down with the ship. I got to do something for myself. That's the question. I don't know the answer, but I mean, when you're looking at those poll numbers, I mean, you got to be thinking, fuck, you know, this is shit. What am I doing?
Well, and the thing is, you know, the part of the dynamics here is they really, really want this damn Supreme Court seat. Do they, you know, do they just say, you know, hey, maybe we're probably still going to keep the Senate. Let's just bite the bullet, do this. And then, you know, if there's a political cost, there's a political cost. Maybe we lose, you know, maybe we lose a senator, but, you know, we'll still barely keep the majority probably. And so it's worth it. Or even if we lose the majority, we've got that Supreme Court justice. Even if the cost of getting of saying of all the Republicans holding together and saying yes
is losing both the House and the Senate. I mean, really?
Well, but look, but the House and the Senate, they can battle again in a few years and try to get it back. The Supreme Court, they get that fifth seat. That's decades.
No, I get that. I get that.
And so that's certainly part of the calculation is that like that Supreme Court seat is extremely valuable. So maybe it's worth losing the Senate to get that seat. But, you know, again, part of that, though, is if you cut this guy loose, you still have time for Trump to nominate a replacement and get him confirmed before the new Congress takes over in January, you know?
Maybe, yeah.
And it's not like he's going to nominate like a liberal all of a sudden. You still got Donald Trump nominating. You still have him promising to go from that Federalist Society list. So, yeah, and you know, a couple women candidates have been named a few times as like a way to combat this for next time around. Yeah, they could.
But did they say, isn't there some rule that you can't like put a guy in like during the election or something?
Oh, don't be silly. That's just for the other guy.
Oh, that's how that works. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm reading the wrong rule book. Okay. Well,
this is the other thing. I mean, all of this is just a big, you know, bit of nonsense anyway, because really the world we're at this point, like all of this is pretending we care about the individual candidate and whether or not they have qualifications and whether or not, like, you know, having attempted rape when they were a teenager, you know, whether this matters or not. We're in a world where the bottom line is if you've got the White House and the Senate, you get whoever you want. And so all of this is just a sham. All of these hearings, all of these whatever, you know, the real rules going forward are if your party has the White House and the Senate, the president gets to pick who they want. If your party has the presidency but not the Senate, you don't get jack. That's the real rules.
Okay. All right. Rules are rules.
Yeah. So we'll see. Like
rules are rules. Again, you got to follow the rules.
Again, it is dynamic enough that I would not be shocked if something new comes out before the Senate votes on Kavanaugh that shuffles these dynamics even more and causes him to get withdrawn or to even lose, you know, like, but I feel like if they knew he was going to lose, they'd withdraw him. But if I had to bet right now, I would say Kavanaugh is absolutely guilty of what Dr. Ford said he's guilty of, but he will still end up on the Supreme Court.
Well, that's certainly a possibility.
Okay. Let's take a break. And I guess we'll do a little bit of a lightning round before we wrap up the show. Back after this.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, we are back. Let's do a lightning round. Let's do four topics, two from me, two from Yvonne. Yvonne, go.
Trump declassifying the FBI text messages about the Russia investigation.
Oh, yes, like the Carter Page FISA warrant and all that kind of stuff. He's announced that he's doing this. He's ordered the FBI to do this.
And he announced that he's doing this because...
because this will show how everyone was biased against him and this was the Democrats being evil, right?
Well, actually, he said something directly. There was a direct quote where he said that basically like Hannity and some of his cohorts had been asking for it. So that's why.
Oh, well, of course.
Even though he doesn't even know what's in them. Because he hasn't read them.
Well, and here's the thing. There was also a question, like the FBI was asked after this, did you get an official, you know, order to do this? And apparently, no. The only thing was the public announcement from the White House. There was no, but that's how this White House works.
I mean, I'm like, it's like me going and right now doing a press release about my business unit. And just saying something out loud, and I'm like, I never told anybody inside to do whatever the hell I said in the announcement.
Right, but they're supposed to listen to your public announcement and figure it out.
Right, which is insane, because they would be like pulling their hair, saying, what the f*** did he just announce?
Well, and this is also something that various people inside the FBI have said before would be a red line, because they believe they're already upset at the amount that has already been released about this FISA warrant process and everything else.
Right.
Because it reveals potential sources and methods.
Right.
I believe some of the stuff that was released earlier it revealed the existence of, of human sources in various places. Right. And so the FBI is very, very concerned that a full release of this will basically reveal, you know, not just the traditional like sources and methods, quote unquote, but what that means is specifically, A, you may be burning actual individuals who are helping out that will be in danger because of this. And also you are making it so that anybody you try to attract to help out in future cases is going to be like, I can't trust you. Look what happened to that guy. You know, and so the FBI is not happy about this. I saw some reports that the FBI is, despite the order to do a completely unredacted, declassified version of this doc, is still trying to, you know, block out certain parts of it. And so there's still internal debate going on about this. And so I'm not sure what we will see and when it's released. I think it'll be very interesting, whatever it is. I mean, I love seeing the top secret stuff, but, you know, this seems fundamentally, as usual for Donald Trump, very irresponsible because he's not, it's not just that he's not thinking through the consequences. It's he doesn't care about the consequences.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care.
You know, it
the
has,
guy doesn't care.
And so, I don't know. And I don't believe that this stuff, like everything we've seen so far, when they've released this stuff, we've had the congressional Republicans and others sort of say, once you see this, you'll see how evil the Obama administration was and how biased they were and how much they were going after us and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the real crimes were from the Obama administration and the Clinton campaign and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all of this Russia stuff is a distraction, witch hunt, all made up, but the real criminals are over there. But then when we actually see the documents, it's like, this is completely normal and people are doing what they should do based on the evidence that's in front of them.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, okay. There's a FISA warrant on Carter Page because there was significant evidence that the Russians were trying to recruit him as a spy.
Right.
And he had significant other contacts that looked very, very suspicious. So, yeah, we probably should be looking at him. And that's what the documents we've seen so far have shown.
And, yep.
And so, you know, I don't know that what they're releasing is proving their point at all. But, and this is a repeated theme with this kind of stuff, it doesn't necessarily matter. Because the people who look through it in detail and the experts who are like, yeah, yeah, this looks like it follows standard procedure and they're doing exactly what they should do, blah, blah, blah. They're doing this because there was reasonable suspicion of that, blah, blah, blah. The people who pay attention to that are already like, already know that Donald Trump and his cronies are crooks, right? The people, meanwhile, who are listening to the right-wing echo chamber are going to ignore all of that and only hear the person yelling about how this document proves the Democrats are evil.
Right.
And the fact that the document is public doesn't matter because it's probably going to be what? Like a 50 to 100 page dense document full of legal stuff that none of these people are going to read that. They're going to see what Hannity has to say about it.
Well, let's be clear. Trump hasn't even read it.
Well, of course not.
Apparently care about it. Okay. All right. So next.
My turn. Okay. I guess we should talk about the new Apple stuff. So this will be a short thing, not a whole new segment, but you know, it's worth a lightning round thing. Apple released new phones, new watches, new iOS, new Mac OS. The only one I've got physically in my hand so far is the new iOS, and I have an old iPhone 6 Plus. I installed it on the first day. One of the features of iOS 12 was that they actually concentrated on improving performance for old phones, and I can definitely feel the performance improvement on this. Certain basic things just are working more smoothly than they were before, and I appreciate that. I'm very excited about the screen time feature, not necessarily for restricting myself, because I, you know, maybe I'll do that, maybe I won't, but I love tracking. And this gives you all sorts of stats on the usage of your phone. So I've been checking this stupid thing several times a day, looking at like what apps I'm using and how much I'm using it and how much I'm picking up the phone and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of fun. I'm enjoying that. One thing I will say, I have had Bluetooth problems since the update though. So,
you know, that seemed that like, it's been a common thread the last few years, a Bluetooth problem in the new iOS update.
Like my Bluetooth keeps cutting out. I mean, it reconnects itself, but like, I'll be listening to something and it cuts out for a second and then comes back. And that was not happening before this update. And now it is, and it seems to be happening in multiple apps. So I think it's not just like one app is doing something funky. There's something with the way that the Bluetooth is interacting with apps. And it may be that it can be fixed by each app developer updating something or other. I have no idea what the actual cause is, but it's annoying as hell, and I hope they fix it soon. You know?
Yeah, the times this happened before, they've usually issued a fix like within a week or two.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, that's the one thing I've noticed that's really annoying about it is definitely something's going on weird with the Bluetooth, and I don't like it.
Okay.
But everything else seems to be pretty nice. I like the improvements to Notification Center in terms of, you know, they're now grouping notifications and give you more control over it. And yes, I know, Android people, you've been able to do that for years if you're on the latest Android.
Yeah, but since most of you aren't, it really doesn't fucking matter. I mean, because that's just the truth. I was just at a table with a couple of people with Android phones. They are on such old versions of Android. Mm-hmm. It's just appalling. Okay. And I'm just like, yeah, well, you know.
Okay. So enough about iOS. The new Mac OS.
I like the watch.
Let me say that just real quick. The new Mac OS doesn't come out for a few more days. So maybe we'll talk about that next week. The phone, the new iPhone XS is just a faster, speedier version of the iPhone 10 from last year. I guess you're supposed to pronounce it 10, not X. Sorry. But the one that I am interested in and have been waiting for is the iPhone XS Max, which is the same size as the Plus phones from before in terms of the physical size of the phone. This is my year for.
Well, let's see. There was an iPhone 8 already that was that size. The thing that it didn't have was that big a screen. Now what you've got is the iPhone 10.
Well, the eight was missing design. A lot of stuff that the 10 had.
Yeah. Yeah. No. What I'm saying is they had the size. Okay. So what I'm saying is that the iPhone. So you get an iPhone 10 sized at the same size as the old iPhone 8 Plus.
Right.
Right. But with the design of the iPhone 10.
The design of the iPhone 10, and the iPhone 10 had a bunch of things. It wasn't just the size of the screen. Like there were better cameras. There were better hardware in a whole bunch of different ways. Faster chip. It was a whole bunch of stuff. So it wasn't just the screen size. But yeah, it's an iPhone 10 in the Plus form factor, and like that was one of the things that really ticked me off about the iPhone 10. Like my wife and daughter both got the iPhone 10 last year, and they like them enough, but whenever I held them, I didn't like the size because I was used to the bigger size, and it felt
because you want an iPad in your pocket, basically.
I mean, and you know, even though the number of square inches was actually bigger than the number of square inches on my phone in the screen, it felt smaller because of the aspect ratio, because it was thinner and taller instead of the same 16:9 shape. So I've been waiting for this phone. So I will almost certainly, I did not order it on the first day it became available. We're doing some budget stuff right now, but I will almost certainly order an upgrade to the iPhone XS Max before the end of this year. And I'm really looking forward to
it. And I just find that name just ridiculous.
You sort of trip over it when you try to say it.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, somebody mentioned, you know, at some point they should just be like, you know, it's the 2018 iPhone, you know, and then there's and then the size. You know, it's the 6-inch one or the 5-inch one or the 3-inch
small, medium, large.
Small, medium, large. People are also pissed off, by the way, that they haven't announced a new one of the small size. So there are a lot of people who are like,
I got it. I was holding out for to see if I could they would launch another small phone, but I guess not.
No. I mean, I think they'll come back to that eventually because they're getting a lot of people who are like, you know, I've tried the big, I've seen people saying, you know, they didn't make a new small one. So I'm ordering three of the small ones. So I have a stash to last the next few years until they figure out that some people's hands are too small for these bigger phones, or some people just prefer them, you know?
The other day I grabbed my own iPhone SE, which I carry as a spare. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cause you're on a iPhone 10 now, right? As your main phone.
Yeah. And when I do grab it, I'm like, it's nice to have it, like, you know, handy, you know, that way. I mean, it is nice, that small form factor, but oh well, it's okay. I can live with this phone.
I think eventually they'll do another small one. But they,
I hope so.
For some reason, they seem to be reluctant. Like they released the SE, but they didn't really seem excited about it. You know,
it was a really nice phone, the SE. I'll have it. I mean, with me, it's a really nice phone.
And finally, and you were jumping into this earlier, but the new watch, the Apple Watch 4, Series 4. And I'll tell you, I've been skeptical of the Apple Watches all along. I think I finally want one. So I intend...
I mean, I've been wanting one since like last year. I got my wife her watch.
My wife has one as well.
That she has the last series. And yep. It's really nice. I mean, they really like honed that product and made it better and better. And I know I saw this one and I'm like, oh man, maybe I'll get one of these.
Yeah.
Now.
I
don't know.
I have decided at this point that when I order my new phone, which I will again before the end of the year, probably next month sometime, I will also order, an Apple Watch as well. Go all the way in.
Yeah.
It's still not perfect, but it looks really nice. Like you said, it's got a whole bunch of things I like. I want the fitness stuff, and I've worn various fitness bands in the past. But you know, after my last one broke, I did not replace it because I do want something that's fully integrated with my phone and all this kind of
stuff. Here's the thing. But let me tell you something. It's not just you those damn Fitbits broke like crazy. My wife went through three of them. My father also kept breaking them too. But both my wife and my dad replaced Fitbits with Apple Watches, okay? And the damn Apple Watches haven't broke, mm-hmm. okay? And so I'm just like, you know, yeah. I mean, it's well made too. It's very resistant. The damn Fitbits just, I don't know. They're just not very well, not very well made.
The last one I had was a Garmin, not a Fitbit, but mm-hmm. same idea. And like it was the band broke, but it was designed so the bands weren't easily replaceable. So like I'm like
right. So yeah. So it's basically useless. Yeah.
I mean, the actual device was fine if I wanted to like.
Yeah, but you can't wear it.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the point.
And I'm like, and in the past, sometimes, you know, when that's I've gotten a new one, I'm like, you know, I don't want another one of these.
Right.
You know, and I like the idea of it completely integrating with my phone. I don't know how much of the, you know, looking at text messages on my arm and stuff I'll do. But I feel like it's an upgrade to the fitness bands I've had in the past. It works well with the phone. It looks really cool now. And I think I'd like it at this point. I still would love it if the battery life was even longer. They have extended the battery life over previous models, but it's still not
right.
As it's still, you still can't go 24 hours without a charge, you know?
Well, I was going to tell you something. I mean, it depends on usage.
Well,
you know,
of course,
my wife
of course.
Has used it that she has gone like more than 24 hours multiple times without a charge.
Absolutely. I expect myself to be a heavy user, like just with my phone. Like, I mean, I never get anywhere close to what they say for battery life, not because of anything wrong with the phone, but because I use it constantly, you know? I mean, just an example, I'll give you a preview now that I have the screen time tracking. On Wednesday this week, my phone usage was 12 hours and 42 minutes.
Oh, my God.
On Thursday, it was 11 hours and 34 minutes. Those are the two full 24-hour periods I have so far since my upgrade.
Good Lord. Okay, well, I haven't gotten that yet. Let me not judge you. I'm wondering what the hell the numbers are going to say for me, so let me...
But yeah, I mean, my actual experience with my phone is pretty much if I'm awake, it's in my hand, you know, so we'll see. So I expect my battery life to be lower rather than higher, but it might be different with the watch. I don't know. Like, I don't know. And as they said, the watch may make me pick up the phone less. I don't know. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Maybe. Who knows?
I don't think so, but you know, whatever. So anyway, those were the interesting things that came out of last week's Apple announcement. A few things that people expected that did not happen. People were hoping for new Mac minis. That did not happen. So that may be later. Usually Apple has another event before the end of the year. Like September is their traditional time for the new iPhones. But usually they squeeze in another event sometime between September and the end of the year where they throw in odds and ends, sometimes new iPads, sometimes new iMacs, sometimes other products. So we'll see if they have another thing. Like another thing I haven't had in a while, and I'm sort of starting to think, do I want one again? Do I want another iPad? Even though I've got the big screen phone, and I'm not sure. Maybe, but not the big, huge ones. I would want the medium sized ones, but I don't know. We'll see. And only if there's a good update. Okay. Enough about Apple.
All right. Well, I'm going to suggest that we end like right now, because our connection has been like flaking really badly in this last segment.
Oh, has it? You hit. Okay. I can still hear you fine, but okay. I guess we won't do the last two topics then. So sad. So sad.
Sorry, folks, but I think something's happening and I keep like not listening to what Sam is saying. So,
okay. Well, in that case, let's cut it short here. This lightning round only had two topics. Oh, well, that is another Curmudgeon's Corner. Thank you all for joining as usual. We would love it if you go to iTunes and review the show. We talked last week. We got a few new reviews and that was very exciting.
Yes, exciting.
That's right. If you're listening to the show and have something to, you know, review us, tell people whether you like it, hate it, whatever, go to iTunes and leave a review. It does help, especially the good reviews, but we're not going to tell you not to do a bad review. If you really hate us, you know, feel free, I guess.
And actually we find those funny.
Well, if you leave a funny review, like if all you do is leave us one star and leave.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but if you slam us with like some wit and charm, I'm up for it.
Exactly. Aside from that, you can leave comments for us. You can email us at Facebook. You can email us at feedback@curmudgeons-corner.com. You can go to Facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner and leave comments on the episodes there. If you really like the show, you can of course, donate to the cause at Patreon, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. And, at $2 a month or more, you can get access to our Curmudgeons Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and some other listeners of the show are in there chatting about the news of the day throughout the week, and other things when we feel like it as well. Have I forgotten any? Oh yeah. If you donate even more money, you can get fun things like mugs or postcards or us ringing a bell, other things like that. But hey, I think that's it. Anything else you want to close up with, Yvonne?
Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye-bye.